Okay. Hi, guys. I am April Parm. And we're going to be talking today about seed sovereignty, which I think is a really interesting and fun and sexy and invigorating topic, right? Who doesn't like a good seed? I love a good seed. It makes me very happy and content. But also, it's good for our communities, right? It's good for the environment. It's good for our culture. It's good for our region. It's good for the country. And amazing for the world. So I'm April Parms Jones, and I do consulting with groups all across the country and into sweet, sweet little Canada, which I love. I'm originally from Akron, Ohio, which is the home of Goodyear. We say on the wings of Goodyear, our city, you know, flies high. I'm a graduate of the University of Akron. All my family went to the University of Akron, and I graduated from the University of Akron from the LeBron James Family Foundation School of Education at the University of Akron. And I write for Mother Earth News, Grit, and other publications. So I'm going to start off my talk. This is a recipe that I actually wrote. It's in Mother Earth News, and it's about purple carrots. So I went to Meadowlark Hearth, which is the card I passed out to most of you, and it's in Scottsbluff, Nebraska. It is the only biodynamic seed company in the Midwest. How exciting is that, right? And they had purple carrots, and they were delightful. They were delicious. They were tasty. And I think I've grown purple carrots, but okay, I'm not a professional, right? I have grown these kind of carrots in my garden, but they were like so small and like very teeny and petite. And I just like ate one raw. I mean, I probably only had four. I ate one raw. I maybe cut some up, put it in butter, had it for dinner. I mean, it was just very few. These are beautiful, stunning, large, robust, purple carrots. And so this really was the start of my seed sovereignty journey. I felt empowered by this purple carrot. We ate that purple carrot. It was flavorful. The flavor was just, man, jam-packed of like beautiful, complex flavor. And it was purple, and then it had the orange on the inside, and we made a purple carrot cake, which I didn't know was possible. And so this is part of seed sovereignty, where we're able to take something that we have experienced from childhood, of those little orange carrots that maybe didn't have the best flavor, didn't really do much for me and my spirit when I was eating them, to having the magic and the majesty of a purple carrot. So the question was, sometimes I see multicolored carrots at my local co-op. Are purple carrots nutritionally different than orange carrots? And then this is the whole article. And the scheme of the article is, purple is powerful, right? Purple is fabulous, it's tasty, and there are extra nutrients in purple carrots. The flavor is more peppery, right? More robust, not quite as sweet, but jam-packed with nutrients and jam-packed with flavor. And so when we're thinking about our own seed sovereignty, it really allows us to have a full complexity of experiences. We can talk about our own childhood experiences. We can also talk about nutrients. And I think that is really the key with seed sovereignty, is that it's able to give us more nutrients, it's able to give us more energy, it's able, allowing us to live longer, healthier, happy lives. And so really focusing in on that when we're thinking about seed sovereignty is it's the whole person. So this is Meadowlark Hearth, and it's a seed company in Nebraska, and this is their Safe Seed Pledge. They're pledging to offer open pollinated seeds, working with biodynamic practices. They mention Rudolf Steiner and his philosophy on agriculture. They're saying they're committed to this, and they want to have trust, understanding, personal contact, and they're following specific guidelines. They talk about the purity of the variety, safety from genetic pollution. These are the things that are important to them and their Safe Seed Pledge. And so when we're thinking about creating our own sovereignty in seeds, it's important to think about what are our values. What are the things that are important to us that we want to hold sacred and we want to hold firm? Are they purity? Do we want the very, very best for our communities? And we can do this through seeds. Do we want to create trust in our communities, right? Trust, sometimes it seems as if, is at an all-time low. It's really hard to feel like you can trust your fellow man. But with seeds, you're allowing people to have the opportunity to trust you. When a person buys a seed from you, it is an act of faith, right? They don't know. Is that little seed gonna come up? Is it gonna do well in your soil? Right, people have a lot of fears, right? There's a lot of questions in life in general, but we're also talking about seeds. You have questions. Is this seed going to be prosperous? Is it gonna be fruitful? Is it gonna multiply? These are all questions people have. In the seed movement, we are allowing people to have trust in us, to have trust in our businesses, and to have trust in our communities. When people are able to buy a seed from you, and the seed is able to be rooted, grounded, and sprout, that gives them trust. Trust in you as the provider, but also trust in the economy. I gave you money, and you gave me something back of value. I trust you as a community member and a resource. So it's a really amazing way to build our own seed economy, but also our economic economy. Because when people have trust in you, they're able to move more freely in society and move more freely in the economic principle of seed sovereignty. So think very carefully about yourself as a seed producer and the values that you're holding firm and communicating. Now, every community is going to be different. Some communities, maybe this is too many words, right? Maybe you just need two words to talk about your seed sovereignty and your values. Maybe you need one word. Maybe you need a picture, right? Just a picture of a purple carrot, right? And people automatically have thoughts and ideas that are happy and positive and upbeat, of trust, of purity, of being true attached to that photo. This is a certification process. They talk about how they're labeling, how the seed is grown, and the types of seeds that are available. Talks about their land size, and it also, once again, mentions Rudolf Steiner. talks about their training. Also very important to include when we're thinking about our seed sovereignty. Now, training can be something that is informal. It can be something that is formalized. But to talk about your passion, like I've studied this seed for 5 years. I've done these trials. I've partnered with different seed organizations regarding this. And to talk about the research that you've done and the work that you've done. Also talking about relationships that you have with universities that are doing seed research. And being a part of the trials is also a part about building our own seed sovereignty. It allows us to interact and connect to resources that are available in our communities. This is the email. Now we're going to do a quick video.
My name is Beth Everett. We farm.
Let me see if I can switch it over. Is it allowing me to switch? No. Okay. Perfect timing. You heard the video.
And the business is... My name is Beth Everett. We farm, and the business is called Meadowlark Hearth. We grow vegetables locally. We have grass-fed beef, and then we also have a national seed business. My love of growing seed came about gradually. I had lots of questions about how the seed comes about. If you work with a seed, it works with you. It's like doing artwork. And then they'll form a little seed that's just lovely. It takes 2 years to grow cabbage, carrot seed, onion seed, and all of those interest me the most because they're the most intricate. I learned alongside my husband, Nathan. I am very interested in sharing with other people. Love to support Nebraska Public Radio because it's really important for me that we have access to hearing various programs and news from all over the world. We have 2 time zones in our state, and we really need to connect. It's important. Listening to Nebraska Public Media has helped me appreciate how many points of view there are. Sometimes I don't agree, but it gives me a tolerance and appreciation of others. I'm very grateful for Nebraska's climate in order to grow good vegetable seed that's most often disease-free. That is an essential for our progress as Meadowlark Hearth Farm. I really appreciate this land and revere its history. I'm Beth Everett from Scottsbluff, Nebraska. I listen and support Nebraska Public Media.
So while he's pulling that, there we go. Perfect. Thank you. The clicker's not, there we go. So as we're thinking about creating a movement, mobilization, and bolstering economic growth, you can see that Beth is talking about the seed. She's showcasing the seed and the plants that are created with that seed. And really, when we're thinking about seeds, it's like so many things, right? It's like you're an artist. It's like you're an economist, right? It's like you're your own business. Then you have the culinary part, right? The food, the deliciousness. There's so many parts. Then there's the flowers, right? There's so many parts that are part of the seed. It's so powerful. And there's so many parts that you can access, utilize, and incorporate into your own community, incorporate into your own culture. So it's really about celebrating the historical legacy of seeds. So I was chit-chatting with people at the conference, and one guy, we were having a conversation, great conversation, and he mentioned the word heritage, or maybe it was history, I'm not sure which one. And that was like a trigger for me. I was like, ooh, what kind of heritage are we talking about? What kind of history are we talking about? But it was revelatory for me because we all have a heritage, right? We all have a culture. We all have our own historical legacies. And seeds are really a part of that journey. It's a great way for us to connect to each other, to build trust, and to build community. Because we're all sharing the same legacy. We're on the same land, and we're able to interconnect and touch each other in a positive, happy way regarding seeds. And so it's a great opportunity for us to really, I think sometimes we want to shy away from our heritage, right? Shy away from our history. But it's an awesome opportunity to say, no, this is who I am. This is my land. This is my culture. And to really elevate and highlight it in a very positive way. This is one of the seeds that Beth is planting, celery root. And so it's a resilient crop. Matures fall to early winter, and it's used in soups, stuffings, and it can be grated in a Waldorf salad. And so thinking about this type of crop that a lot of us may not have a lot of access to, a lot of relationship with. This is an excellent root vegetable that does spectacular and is tasty and it stores well. And so thinking back to ways that we can use these types of crops to elevate our culture, elevate our history, and for storage is super important, and for climate change, right? With climate change, we really are going to have to, there's a lot of anxiety about climate change, right? What's going on with the weather? It's warm one day, it's cold the next, there's drought, then there's too much rain, et cetera, et cetera. Going back to these heritage crops allows us as a community to be more resilient in our food systems. Because these are crops that do well, right? They're hardy, kind of like us, right? They're a little rough around the edges, but inside they're sweet and tasty and very nutritious. And so this allows us, through seed sovereignty, to really communicate with our neighbors, with our friends, with our business community about crops that we can elevate and utilize that will help us with the climate. Because this is in the ground, right? This is down the street. This is one county over. This is accessible and stores well and is something that we can utilize. And we don't have to go so far for our food. We can be more self-reliant and involved in our community. So seed sovereignty is about building and focusing on food, building knowledge, and building skills that are traditional. Garlic, another crop that is amazing and stores well, can be readily utilized, and is easy to save for seed. Everybody likes garlic. Everybody utilizes garlic. This is a good gateway seed, right? It really is. Everybody likes it. You can use it as a tincture. You can use it for your health. You can use it on salads. I mean, on and on and on it goes. Garlic is an excellent, excellent crop for seed sovereignty. Stores very well, resilient, and strong. This is the early spinach, dark to medium leaf greens, and it's full of flavor, and it's quick growing. The thing about seed sovereignty is we have an expansive ecosystem, and it allows us to fully participate in all of its wonder and glory. You can have spinach that is more resistant to blight and to pests. You can have a softer spinach. You have multiple colors of spinach. There's a lot that you can do. And it allows people to have an expression of their creativity and allows them to have, think expansively. When they see there's five different types of spinach, right? It allows them to think that there's lots of ways to solve their own problems. There's lots of ways to address issues that may be in their lives. And there's lots of ways that you can be special, unique, and different. In a nice, safe way. And seed sovereignty allows us, each of us, to express our own individuality and our own views and our own thoughts. And we can also go back to the past and get our grandfather's spinach, right? And thinking about how we can tell the story of our people and of our land and of our culture. All using spinach. I encourage you to highlight seed sovereignty with photos. So including the different types of tomatoes and photographing them. This is a corn de bouc tomato, delicious, full of flavor. You can can this tomato, you can eat it fresh, you can make a pasta sauce, a tomato sauce, a tomato paste, pizzas. I mean, on and on it goes. It's the all-purpose tomato. And it's called a corn de bouc because it kind of turns up like goat horns. It's a French variety. So I encourage us to think about the crops that we have that are unique and special, and highlighting them with photography. A photo is worth a thousand words, and it allows people to see what kind of seed that they're gonna get, you know, in the end. It also allows them to see what traits they want, what color schemes they want, and then you can also highlight the flavor profile that you're gonna get of the seed. So we're creating a unique story about seeds. We're incorporating the community, home cooks, restaurants, food clubs. So when we're thinking about seeds, it's good to think about how is the seed going to be utilized? Is it going to be in a community garden? Is it going to be a cover crop? Are home cooks going to use this? Are restaurants going to use this? And thinking about all the different communities that are going to be using the seeds. So I'll tell you a story. I'm in Akron, Ohio, and we're not quite looking as beautiful as you guys are in Wisconsin, right? We're just a little unhealthier than we should be, right? We're not cooking at home as much. We're busy. We eat out a lot. We're in a time crunch. And so I've decided to start a club. It's going to be like a seed club. It's called the Cool Kids Radish Club, the Akron chapter. So all we're going to do is get multiple types of radish seeds, plant them in the ground on the east side of Akron, and grow radishes, have radish parties. We're going to do bread and butter with radishes and, like, I don't know, come up with some recipes and enjoy ourselves on radishes. And that is the power of seed sovereignty. It allows you to bring a group of very diverse people, like all my friends are really interesting and different, and we're all going to come together and hang out around radishes. And I don't even know if I really like love radishes, but just going to be honest, but it's like an easy crop, right? It's a gateway crop. It's easy to grow. There's very little failure, not a lot of blight. So these are the ways that we can come together and highlight our sense of community and share in safe places and elevate and talk about the seeds. So finding collaborators on the journey. It's important to partner with civic groups, places of worship, libraries, and gardens. And so as I was thinking about this talk, I was thinking about all the ways that we can talk about seed sovereignty. And one way is through art. Art is always such a great expression of ourselves and of our culture, and it allows you to be self-reflective and to think about yourself at a deep level. And so we too can use seeds as art, using them in art projects, having, you know, a small exhibit at the library using seeds as art, maybe at the main art museum. And it really allows people to see all the different types of seeds, right? You look at a painted pony bean and you're like, what? This is magical. And each one is different and unique. And so really thinking about ways that we as a community can elevate seeds, give people exposure to seeds and that they don't all look the same. And there's multiple types of corn, right? Small to large, colors, etc. And it allows people to see, oh yeah, I'm a little different. That's okay, I'm a painted pony bean, you know, right? I am unique, I am special, I am different. And so really thinking about ways that we can include our communities in their seed sovereignty, whether it's a seed library at your actual library, whether it's a community seed library. Thinking about ways that we can interact and communicate regarding seeds. So aligning our values, moving production closer to home, and creating a seed story. So it's important, as we're thinking about with COVID that we've all experienced, our food system is very fragile. We thought it was very strong and resilient, but it's more fragile than we thought. And so having access to seeds allows us resiliency in our communities. It is like insurance, right? Has anybody's insurance gone up? I read an article. They said insurance is going up. We have an opportunity to insure our own selves and to insure our own sustainability, our own resiliency against market impacts. And so having seeds allows us to have more control and more sovereignty over our own community food system. And so when we're thinking about seed sovereignty, it's also important to think about our own resiliency and our own supply chain and how we are enriching and assisting ourselves to feed our own communities, things that are culturally relevant, things that are historical, and things that have value. So we're going to pause here and do some questions about seed sovereignty that you may have. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm aware of historical and then modern practices of people, like mostly indigenous people, keeping seed banks for like very, very specific purposes. I'm wondering if you had any insight about how we can partake in that practice in a way that's especially like climate resilient, and like I guess what that like looks like in practice, if you have any
insight. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to have your own seed bank and thinking about your own security and thinking about what are the crops that do well in your soil. Everybody's soil is extremely different, right? And thinking really about like, what have I grown in the past that's done really well? There's certain crops that I particularly enjoy and that are resilient. And then also thinking about storage. Are these things that I can store or preserve very easily? So in Youngstown, Ohio, we have a large Italian community, and so they have a tradition where they get a lot of tomatoes and then they have canning, right? And they just can all of those delicious tomatoes. So if that's something that's cultural and that you feel like, oh, I can resonate with, that is something that you can easily do. You can always preserve into like pickles, things of that nature. Potatoes. I love potatoes. I do. And they store incredibly well. Onions, they also store very well. Garlic. So I think you have to think about what are the things that I actually will eat? Like, I don't want it to go bad. What are things that are cultural? Is there a way I can preserve this or store this in a good way? Does anybody have any good like seed saving programs in their community that they would like to elevate and talk about? Yes.
I just want to share that in one of our libraries in Madison, they have like the old card catalog files.
Yes.
And then the book bought in for anyone to take.
Well, that's really nice. Are they having a good turnaround with that?
I don't know. It just made me really excited to see it, and I thought it was a great idea.
It is a great idea. It is a really great idea.
Speak to that. I just had moved to Madison, passed by a community garden when I was bringing my U-Haul in. Found those seeds at the library, which was right next door to me, and planted my garden with them, and it was phenomenal because it literally connected me to a community of gardeners with it. So in real practice, in real time, seeds have to be worked out. Slaps.
Yeah, it slaps. Yes? Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I think that we also have a seed library in Akron, Ohio. And so I think that it's about having a conversation. So there was an event, we had an MLK event, and then we had a speaker, and then actually the director of the library was just walking around. And I had an opportunity to talk to her, and I said, I love the seed library. I appreciate you having the seed library. I utilize it. My mother utilizes it. The community utilizes it. And it's such a great resource because people can plant their own food and it allows them to be food secure. And so I think it is about having those conversations with people in privilege and people who are in power. So when I see my county executor, Eileen Shapiro, I also am gonna say, I love the seed library. It is such a great resource for our community, and it elevates, and you know, I was a little bit scared that they were gonna close it because normally, historically, they close it, but this year it was open year round, which is amazing. So really talking about ways that we can slowly expand the small programs that we have and talk about how it's such a good return on investment. They're investing small resources to it, and the return on investment for the community good and the community welfare. And so I think framing it in those sort of terms really helps. Also, there's studies that say if your community is hungry, your crime goes up. When people are hungry, they are very criminal. So in my city, our crime went down 30%, and we have a seed library. So that really, when people have access to growing their own food, it makes them happier, healthier, and wealthier. And that reduces liability and crime for everyone. So really framing it in those sort of terms really does help. Does anybody else have any success stories about seed sovereignty in their community, or partnerships they want to talk about, or any other questions? Yeah.
I was in a previous community working with another community garden program, and we were doing micro grants with Microsoft as a ChangeX platform that the grant funding is incredibly easy, few to no strings attached, and you just have simple project follow-up. So we were able to source pollinator gardens, pollinator seeds, and then set up a seed bank for the community organization and get a refrigeration unit for that cooling infrastructure for the seeds long-term viability. But it was incredibly straightforward and simple to do, and had just a very small community organization just to help sign off the grant and then to get capture that funding. But on behalf of public libraries, I'm sure they would be very jazzed if you offered to write a grant for them. That was, of course, the case banks properties, but starting communications, having conversations, and getting that consent to forward. No one likes to take down free money.
No, absolutely. And that, you know, that's an excellent point. Could you talk about the, hello? Could you talk about the, yeah, I know. I was trying to see if you could use a mic. I know you'd have a soft voice. That's okay, though. That's good. Let's see if this will work. Okay, could you, do you mind just repeating it briefly so the whole group can hear?
There's several small grants and small grant opportunities. It's worth checking out. Unfortunately, working with larger private foundations, good opportunities for that because they love to foot their tax bill or change their tax bill for donated funds. So Microsoft has a program called ChangeX. It's very easy to apply to and register as, and a lot of their programs support childhood education programs, nature conservation, and pollinators, bees. And so that was what we paired with. The organization is called Watchmen in Des Moines. It's very much community-focused, community-driven organization that teaches kids kung fu, beekeeping, and gardening skills, because that is what the community wanted. So I was there working on the gardening projects and the apiaries there, but we used grants from Microsoft to fund that program operation and then start seed banks, beekeeping programs, and then supported community garden infrastructure with it. But there's a litany of examples and opportunities for that, and just looking at local community foundations, several cities, states have community foundations that really it's just having a conversation and pitching that idea and seeing that need in the community.
I just have like another example of a success story of seed sovereignty. So I work at the same university that was mentioned earlier in Ashland, and I've been working in their garden program there for many years. And we have a lot of people, because we're a place of education, a lot of people love giving us seeds. We get a lot of seed donations, and one of the most interesting and like exciting one that we got was a few years ago. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of the Gete Okosoma squash. It's also known as the Gete Okosoma, I think is what it's called. It's also called the thousand-year-old squash, and it was a squash, like it was a very old squash variety that was discovered by some tribal nation in northern Wisconsin. And I think it was like Winona LaDuke that was heading this. Uh-huh. Like she planted these seeds and grew seedlings, and she gifted one of these seedlings to us. And so we were able to grow two of these plants and then keep those seeds. And so it was like this beautiful like resurgence of a new old squash variety that we were then able to like keep the seeds of and add to our seed library. So those sorts of opportunities are like so cool from an educational perspective and from like a continuation of culture perspective. And also it was like literally this big, like it was a big squash, which was super cool. It was pretty delicious, yeah.
Yeah. Michael, do you have any thoughts about ways people can procure seeds for their seed libraries?
Yeah, I work for Organic Seed Alliance, and I'll also plug that we have a lot of free resources available on our website for seed saving guides, variety trial, plant breeding, all those kind of things. So, and if you want my contact information, just find me after the talk or later today. But I used to work for a small seed company, and we'd always get requests for seed packets, for all various uses, but seed libraries was a pretty common one. So if you are trying to organize a small seed library, a lot of seed companies have pretty simple forms that you can fill out, or just send them an email and say, hey, I have a seed library. Do you do a donation program? The other places to look, sometimes hardware stores, like local Ace hardware stores, are usually locally owned franchises. So they often get seed packets from larger seed companies. And at the end of the year, a lot of those bigger seed companies don't want their seeds back. So sometimes the seeds are just disposed of, but oftentimes you can get a donation. So looking at local hardware stores and reaching out to many seed companies.
Hi, I'm Caitlin, or Big Woman, and I'm a descendant of the Fond du Lac Band. I'm Anishinaabe. I work with Dream of Wild Health. We're a native-led nonprofit with 30 acres in Hugo, Minnesota, and programming that focuses on the Twin Cities urban native community. And I'm also part of Indigenous Sea Keepers Network. And I appreciate bringing in some Indigenous knowledge to this space. And like, I just wanted to remind people about kind of, as you're seeking out seeds, as you're trying to create public access to seeds, not everyone's necessarily entitled to some of our ancestral seeds. And the Gete squash that you're talking about, that's one that comes from the Miami people, and then it was just kind of given an Ojibwe name recently. And so I think it's important to look at the real story. And there is a huge movement. Did anyone see Bagwajanini's workshop on the land yesterday? So with a lot of the land grabs, you know, the same thing happened to our seeds. And, you know, seeds are our relatives. They're ones that are trying to come home. And so when you're finding seed, when there's seed that has a story that's very new, just think about maybe the history before that. And remember, there is a seed rematriation movement happening, and to try to interrupt some of the harm that's been happening through our seeds. So, Miigwech, for listening.
Is there any seeds that you would like to tell us about that are part of the alliance?
No, that's okay. But if there's, you know, Indigenous people in the space that have connection to seeds, I'm very happy to speak with other Native people about that.
Okay, thank you so much.
I just have a question that I can yell out.
Okay.
So we are just starting to do seed saving on our own.
Yes.
And we want to distribute them, and like we distributed them downstairs yesterday, and we would love to share them. We don't know if we're doing it correctly. Does anybody have resources on like the best way of seed to make sure that your seeds are viable? Because I would love to give people seeds, but I don't want to give you a whole handful of seeds and horrible germination because I didn't store them correctly over the fall or something like that.
Michael?
Yeah, I can give you some information.
Cool. Absolutely. I think the key thing with seed storage is moisture. Moisture is always an enemy, right? It can just degrade. So really keeping them in like an airtight container, or maybe one of those little storage things that kind of sucks up moisture. It's really important. And then I have a basement, you know, like in a basement, maybe with the, you know, humidifier running. And a lot of it is trial and error, and seeing like your own environment, the places that you have to store, and then to see over time how it does. I mean, you know, seeds, it's kind of like every little seed's like a hope and a prayer, right? Sometimes you may need to say a little prayer, right? Depending. And so, you know, if you don't have really high germination rate the first time, it's not a failure. Right? It's something that you can learn from. And I think that's the key thing about saving seeds is we feel like we have to do everything exactly perfect each time. And, you know, you want to give people the very best. And I think that is a good starting point. But also knowing that that is part of the seed journey, right? It's part of the learning process that not every seed is going to make it even when it comes into a plant, maybe it's not the best plant and you have to take it out. So really it allows us to see about ourselves, but also about the seed. And so to give a seed is a gift. And you know, if you don't have good germination rate, then you can adjust and try again. And that's another great point that I wanted to bring up, is when we're saving our own seeds and we're growing season after season, it really allows us to build our own resiliency, because we're building up our own skill set and identifying seeds that do well. And then we're able to save those seeds year after year. And when we're planting in our own soil year after year, we're building our own resiliency, but we're also building the land's resiliency. And seeds get to know the land, and the land gets to know the seeds, right? It knows your climate, it knows your soil, the way things are. And when we're eating locally, we're able to have more nutrients. The food is more bioavailable for our bodies, to give us the nutrients and the strength that we need. And so when we're thinking about climate change, it's also, this is a great climate change prevention strategy, because we are allowing ourselves to have access to seeds that are amazing and wonderful, but also that we have a relationship with and that we know. Are there any other success stories or questions that people may have? Okay. So we're showing empathy and care to the seventh generation. So we're really allowing for our children to have exposure to seeds. And I think that's a really great place to start, thinking about our children and thinking how we want to leave a better world for them and a better community for them. And so as we're starting with this seed sovereignty, it's important to really involve the young people, involve young children. When I was a little young girl, I learned how to add and subtract with the Buckeyes. Anybody know about the Buckeyes, right? So allowing, and it was very pivotal, and I still can add and subtract to this day, so it worked. But allowing our children to incorporate seeds into our educational system. So allowing children to have access to corn seeds when they are adding and when they are subtracting, right? Incorporate it when they're learning how to count. Like counting out the seeds, help me count out the seeds. And thinking about ways we can implement that in our library programs, in our school programs, in our after-school programs, and thinking really holistically about our seed education. Because if we are just educating ourselves, and we're just educating our friends who are in the same age group, eventually we're gonna age out, right? At some point, it happens to us all. So we really have to think to the seventh generation with our seed movement and incorporating and involving young children in the seed movement and giving them the access to seeds. Because like we've talked about, there's so many different types of seeds. There's different crops. There's different nutrients. There's different recipes. And it allows the children to express themselves and to think about themselves. Like, I'm not really a carrot, I'm more of a squash personality. And that's okay. And so allowing them to have the exposure to seeds, exposure to crops, and incorporating it in the foundational parts of their education helps us to keep seed sovereignty going until the seventh generation. So we're meeting the needs of the community, and we're highlighting how the seed will include cultural references and highlight the heritage. So when we're thinking about seeds, it's really important to think about what are the kinds of recipes that we can include in our seed sovereignty movement. Are there dishes that will highlight and elevate the seed? And most importantly, highlight and elevate our own historical perspective. So there's a book called The President's Dinner. It's an excellent book. And it talks about how food has been so pivotal in our country's history. How when people are able to meet and gather through food, relationships are formed. People are able to overcome great obstacles that are in their way. And they're able to come together and have a meeting of minds. And seeds also allows us to have that sort of connection. It allows us to come together as greater than just our individual selves, and to have a shared meal, a shared history, a shared story, and to bond together through seeds, and to overcome. And so when we have issues in our communities, seeds are a great way for us to have relationships, to have dialogue, and to have communication with each other. Because seeds are very sweet and kind and wonderful, and everybody can relate to a seed. Everybody can relate to a crop. And so it's a great way to bring our communities together and to talk about our cultural legacies regarding food and how we can intermingle them together. So as we're thinking about this, another way is culturally appropriate foods. Foods that are cultural to us uniquely. So for me, it would be black-eyed peas, also known as cowpeas. Delicious, right? Such a great crop. Mostly they only grow in the South. But as the climate is constantly changing, that variety increases. I'm going to pause here, and we're going to talk about some culturally relevant crops that you feel would be good seeds for your community. Are there any other seeds that people feel like would be culturally relevant? It could be a cabbage, it could be a potato. No sharing, any sharing?
In Oneida, yes. It's the white corn. In Oneida, it's the Tuscarora white corn.
Nice. And what do you do with the white corn?
It's almost like a patty. They call it a corn wheel. Mm-hmm. The name is ganastole, and you ground it down to kind of like a fine powder, and then you mix in the kidney beans, and it forms into a patty, and you put it into the water, and you know when it's ready, because like when you first put it down, it sinks to the bottom, you know it's ready. When it floats up to the top, you grab that, and you can cut it in slices, or you could just eat it like that. It's really good fresh, and they do sell it at the One Stop, but I think at home it's better.
Oh yeah, absolutely, 100%. Are there any other meals? Yes.
I mean, I'm Puerto Rican, born and raised in the state, Chicago specifically, but all the peppers, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this particular pepper called ají cachucha that mm-hmm. is the key ingredient to sofrito.
Oh, sofrito.
And if you're Puerto Rican and you cook, you can't cook without sofrito.
No.
And cilantro, of course, all the herbs, mm-hmm. culantro. Which we call recao. So all the herbs and peppers are really key to our cuisine.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing.
We live in northern Wisconsin, so I feel like a lot of seeds for our community are seeds that preserve well, mm-hmm. And that can like keep well into the winter since we have such a short growing season. But I'm also wondering, I work at the school and I run our garden program now, and being out of college, we have a lot of people coming from different cultures, so I'm wondering how I can hold space for like other people's seeds and have those seeds to support their cultures while knowing that I'm not always from those cultures, mm-hmm. and like I may not always know the stories and the knowledge behind that, and like how I can educate myself and also hold that space and be respectful, if anyone has any, you know, advice to share on that.
Well, I think that the key thing about cultural seeds I love and culturally relevant crops is that, and food, is that it allows us to really access each other, right? And to connect deeply. And you do want to make sure that you are very sensitive. Food is sensitive, right? But also allow people to talk about their culture. People love to talk about their food, right? They love to talk about how they cook it. They're, you know, they may not tell you the secret, but they may tell you one technique, right, of how they're able to make things. And it really allows you to bring people closer together. And I think that you have to have a curiosity and say, I'm open to this and I want to know more, and allow them the space to share what they want to share. And I think it's a great way for us to connect and to be one people, right? And to have shared experiences. So the millet is a really great crop that's very, very popular right now, right? It's from the African continent. I have a friend, Naima, in Minnesota, who was growing it out. She's doing a fabulous, amazing job. And I, as an African-American woman, have not had a lot of experience with millet, but it's very, very delicious. You can put it in a porridge. It's kind of like a quinoa. So it's very interesting and unique. And she's able to tell her story of her seed and why she grows it and the value of it and the nutrients of it. So we're going to pause here. We have Matt. Hello, Matt. Hello. Thank you so much for coming. This is Matt from Meadowlark Hearth. He is a seed expert extraordinaire. And if you would just like talk maybe about one question we had was about making sure you're able to preserve the seeds, and then maybe germination, if you have.
Oh, sure, yeah. Hi, everybody. I wasn't sure I was going to talk, but I do grow quite a few seeds. We're in western Nebraska. Yeah, I don't know what exactly you guys have covered, but the logistics of seed growing are pretty detailed, and I don't want to get bogged down in it. Germination testing is very important, for sure. And if you collecting seed, if you're just doing it, you know, kind of a one-off thing, it's always pretty interesting to see how well your seed did, you know, germination test it. Yeah, I guess seed storage is something we have definitely invested in at our farm. It's climate controlled, humidity controlled. Being where we are in the arid high plains, you know, it's quite a bit different than here. We don't have the humidity like you guys do. And that helps with a couple things in the seed process. So drying them down, but also storing. They store quite well. But yeah, humidity is really important. I think what we say we shoot for is the temperature and humidity in the seed room. When you add those two values, they should be less than 110. So that's kind of specific, but that's a good kind of rule of thumb. Then you know you won't have. And I mean, Beth and Nathan, who I work for, they've done this for 40 years, and they have seed that's 40 years old. I would like to move through some of that, but it's like the Noah's Ark, Nathan calls it. And it's really, that's one of the amazing things. And I see we're talking about heritage and that sort of thing. I mean, they both have strong ties to the biodynamic movement to Europe, and a lot of their varieties are European, German, Swiss varieties. And that's always been really cool to me to see, because, you know, in the medieval times, and it wasn't as connected as we are now. Beth likes to talk about our seed collection now in our gardens are so cosmopolitan. You have seed from everywhere, from all cuisines, and, you know, thinking about Italians and tomatoes, like they didn't have tomatoes forever, and then they got them, and they're like, oh my gosh, it's so good. And now they have tomatoes. And so it's just, that's always been a really fascinating thing to me, and to see and hear from them what they like, what they've grown, what they grew up with, and varieties that they bring in. You know, we have a Shinto Kiwa cucumber, which is from a village in Japan, that a man brought to one of their friends years ago, and it's the most delicious cucumber I've ever had. And so just seeing all those stories and history in each seed is really a fascinating thing. But yeah, I guess if there's any other questions about kind of the more specifics of seed growing, I'd be happy to answer them. But thanks. Yeah. Our drying room is often the barn loft. So.
Okay, yeah.
But like what crops?
So what we collected, calendula, echinacea, Leonarda, mostly herb seeds.
Definitely.
And I've always just done the sprinkle before, you know. We haven't collected the seed with the intention
to save it,
to propagate it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're being very technical, you would test and monitor like the humidity or the moisture of each seed lot that you have. And like I said, we're so dry, it's, you know, and I grow a lot of hay. It's honestly hard to have things too wet where we're at. So that's something I can't speak too much to, but you know, it is kind of a feel thing. You'll know when it's ready, when it threshes easily or breaks apart easily. But yeah. Typically not for the seed, but there is such thing as seed that is too dry. When we store them in paper bags. That's how we like to do it. You know, we have various different sizes of paper bags, and they seem to just breathe easier, so they keep well there. You know, I know some people will keep them in Ziploc or sealed bags. I know for some crops that does work well. I feel like tomatoes are one thing we have more in sealed plastic bags, but for the most part, like flowers, herbs, we'll keep those in paper. Yeah.
Do you mind talking about the saving of the carrots?
The carrots?
Yes.
What? How about?
I don't know. Just talk about the dancing on the carrots and how we save them.
Yeah. So we do grow a lot of carrots. We're in a fortunate position where we don't have wild carrot or Queen Anne's lace, which I believe you guys have here in this part of the country. So that will cross-pollinate with carrots if you're growing carrots out to seed. And carrots are an outcrosser, so they'll cross a fair distance, up to a couple miles, can be, depending on your windbreaks or trees or your climate. But yeah, I do really enjoy growing carrots. I don't know if you've ever worked with carrot seed, but it smells very aromatic and just... Mm-hmm. It's good to wear a mask when you're threshing carrot seed, that's for sure. It has all these little hairs on it that you don't want to breathe in. But we now have a threshing machine for small seed lots, which is great. Because one fun thing we do have a seed fest at the farm, and we'll get the fiddle and the keyboard out, lay them out on tarps, and have folk dances. I don't know if anybody was at the barn dance last night, but we basically do those dances on top of the seed. That's always fun to do. But yeah, that's not, you know, something we do every day, obviously, but yeah, I mean, that goes back to the heritage and traditions of it all. So I don't know so much the history of threshing, but you know, barns in Eastern America had like threshing floors and all that stuff, and that would be their winter work, is, you know, with a flail and threshing the grains. So that community aspect of it is kind of why we like to do it. Yeah, yep.
Thank you, Matt. We may come back to you. So as we're talking about meeting the community needs, so we can even incorporate dancing into our seed movement of harvesting the carrot seeds. Matt put a tarp on the bottom, carrot seeds, right? And then a tarp on the top, and then you dance a jig, right? So thinking about ways we can incorporate seeds into our culture, into our celebrations, into our memories, into our bodies, right? Thinking about ways that we can incorporate seeds into our culture is really important, because if we want seed sovereignty to last to the seventh generation, we have to really incorporate and compact it into our society. So people have visceral, positive, happy memories of seeds. And then they have the know-how on how to harvest the seeds and to save the seeds. And that is super empowering. As we're thinking about our international world in the 1980s, seed companies controlled 15% of the seeds. Now today, it's over 60%. And so we know that when we don't have access to things, prices go up, disruptions in the market, right? It's not a good thing. So when we are allowing ourselves to have access to the seeds and are creating our own seed economy, we're benefiting ourselves, right? We're ensuring that we are going to be able to pay a fair price, we're able to get good quality, and we're able to get seeds that meet our needs. And as we're working with our seeds that are localized, those seeds are able to germinate better. They're able to do better. They know our climate, they know the soil. And that's what I found with growing seeds. When I'm growing, you know, when I lived in the South and I was growing seeds in the South, they did really well. Now I'm in the Midwest, I'm growing seeds in the Midwest from Midwest companies. They do spectacular. They do spectacular. I put the seed in the ground and poof, up comes something. So really thinking about ways that we can localize our economies, but also localize our seed communities. And when we're purchasing seeds, purchasing at the local level. Super, super important. Because it builds up our own resiliency, it builds up our community resiliency, it shows solidarity and care, and it's better for ourselves. It's just better for ourselves. And we are so blessed and highly favored to be in such a great region with so many resources, such great soil, and so many fabulous, amazing businesses that we can support, show solidarity, show care, that have the same values. So the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, says access to seeds is a key strategy to ensure that we are able to produce food in the future. So as we're thinking about all of these different climates that we're experiencing, seeds is a great access point for us to actively engage ourselves to address the climate issues that we are seeing. Also, when you have corporate seeds, they require more inputs of fertilizer, inputs in general. So when we are buying locally and we are enriching and growing our own seed economy, we're also saving ourselves additional time, effort, resources that we can put towards other things. So we're building a resilient, strong, prepared community, and we're highlighting how our seeds are climate ready. And that's another thing that we can talk about and encourage. We want to be climate ready, and seeds are a great access point to that. So when we're talking to our community members, when we're talking to the libraries, teachers, other community gardeners, it's about being climate ready and growing crops that do really well. Matt, we talked about the celery root and the garlic being climate ready. Are there any other crops that you feel like would be really good for climate readiness?
Anytime you're selecting year after year, whether intentionally or not, you know, you're improving that variety, hopefully, for more climate resilience. Let me see. Clint, you have anything you want to say? You know a lot more about seeds than I do. Okay.
So we're creating the power of selection. And like Matt is saying, when we're growing our own seeds, it allows us to see what's going on in our soil actively. Does this crop do well? Do we have a pest, right? How well is this doing as a crop, and which crop can I harvest? Is this something that I want to plant again, or do I need to do a more climate-ready variety of this crop? Thinking of like a spinach, right? Do I need to do another climate-ready type of spinach? It allows us to share information with our neighbors in our community, right? We're sharing a secret about a seed. How does your spinach do? Did it do okay? My spinach is troubled. It's troubled. It's not making it. And then you can talk about what's going on and problem solve. And that person may have resources and knowledge that they can share with you regarding a seed. And it starts with a seed, and then maybe it's something else, right? Because we've built trust, we've built our sense of community, and we have a way of communicating about seeds, but also about other things. And so that's really the power of seeds, is it allows us to build relationships, to build trust, and to build ways of communicating with each other, and to be climate ready. So we're creating our expansive ecosystem. So I was talking today to another farmer, and a great thing about seeds is you can grow tomatoes on top, and then maybe underneath you can put a cover crop. Or maybe underneath you could do microgreens. And so as we're building our seed economy, we're also able to build multiple streams of income. We can plant special varieties of seeds and crops that have a longer shelf life, better storage, or have a longer succession planting of, you know, there's a special broccoli that grows florets a bit at a time, right? So you're able to get your harvest over a longer period of time. So thinking about ways that we ourselves can create an expansive ecosystem using our seeds, ways that we can create multiple streams of income using our seeds. We're cultivating a sustainable and a prosperous future. We're highlighting our cultural value. We're highlighting our historical value. And we're highlighting the nutrient value of seeds and crops. So really thinking about planting crops that are most nutrient dense for you and your community. And it's a great way to educate our children on food, on the types of foods that they like, types of foods they don't, types of crops they like to grow, types of crops they don't like to grow. It's very expansive. Allows us to access ourselves, access our community, and access our shared communal knowledge. And incorporating holidays and family traditions. So incorporating holidays of maybe you all get together, and then you organize the seeds and you make seed packets. A great way to incorporate our seed sovereignty. To have a dance incorporating saving seeds. Having a cucumber day where you pickle the cucumbers, but then we're also saving the seeds. right? Making a dish, but we're saving the seeds. When you're using your tomatoes, teaching your community, teaching your household, teaching your friends, save those seeds. And so thinking about the power of a seed, how we can save our seeds and share that in our cultural communities. Because if we want seed sovereignty, we have to incorporate it into our everyday life. And it's fun, right? It's interesting. I felt magical dancing last night. I was like, oh, this is so much fun. It's good, clean fun. And it's a way that we can incorporate our own values and traditions, and also incorporating in the seeds. So we're going to pause for questions. Does anyone have any thoughts about incorporating seeds for the holidays, cultural values? Yes.
Yeah, so my question is, like, my academic background is mostly in actually like natural resources and conservation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time with climate change, we talk about how you know, we have climate winners and climate losers and plants.
Thank you. I'm talking about how climate change forces us sometimes to make tough decisions about like conservation and choosing new crops that are well adapted to the variability we see with climate change is one strategy. But I'm kind of curious if anyone has thoughts about how we reckon with potentially like losing culturally significant plants to climate change and like how communities are adapting to that, whether that means that like crops need to like migrate north to keep up with like the changing climates and shifting like growing zones. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, absolutely.
So I talked to a USDA breeder who retired and talking about onions, and I was just saving it for fun. And he said you need like 200 plants to keep that diversity alive. And so I'm like, I don't have much space to do that, let alone for all the crops I'm interested in growing. But I sort of feel like the seed industry, like to your point, it's talking about static varieties, things that kind of don't change and adapt. And so, yes, they would have to migrate in order to live as the climate changes. But I sort of feel like we're losing that, like, change in the seed that's adapting to, say, where we are if we're not moving. Like, if we're not a migratory group, I guess. So I'd just like to think of it all just like, I sort of, when you ask about culture, I'm like, I don't even quite feel like I know my culture. So it's interesting when I save seed, it's just, I'm like creating cookbooks and sort of a relationship with my food that I don't feel like I'm connected to in a history sense.
Thank you. I just want to make a comment. I'm more like into the grazing world, but the seed has been a big thing in the farming world of just like who's controlling agriculture and so many acres. Mm-hmm. And I would just love to see like in the discussion of climate and in culture, like some of our leaders that, you know, have a microphone, whether it's social, religious, or to really start talking about seed and how important it is for freedom and just the, what's our adaptation. Mm-hmm. And if I could just say something personally, like I've always like studied a little bit of my family history and some was from Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And I just know of all the, what happened, you know, like 80 years ago about the government taking and controlling all that seed. And that's, you know, where people were kind of reestablishing that in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I think worldwide, we just need to recognize every cultural, you know, value of the seed saving and just promote that however we can.
Yeah, I'm a farmer and I save my own seeds. And to the point of moving genetics northward, As I continue to save my seed where I can, it's adapting to the changes I'm seeing. So, you know, I'm planting bush beans deliberately early so they get frosted, so that the ones that survive are the ones that are going to handle extreme spring conditions. And I might not be growing the 16 varieties of potatoes that I started with, but I'm growing a different 16 varieties that are shorter season. Yeah. And I can get them out of the ground in case we have a really wet fall. And so that's the beauty of being able to save our own seed in our own community. The other thing we're doing is a number of farmers and gardeners in my area who are pretty isolated. We're in Herbster, Wisconsin, so we're right near Washburn and fairly near Ashland. We are deciding, you know, as we have all saved our seed for many years, making sure that there's at least three people on all of our favorite squashes, mm-hmm. and that we're separated. And so I might not be able to grow all the squash seed that I want to save because it will cross. But if I just focus on one of them and then get the other seeds from someone else, then we have our regional seed resilience. Mm-hmm. I save outcrossers by growing out one population one year, and then another population the next year, so biennials like parsley, for example, saving that seed and then just mixing it together to get my 200 individuals, because I don't have a ton of space either. But I have a year-round food production system, so I can overwinter the biennials. And so there's ways to figure out how to do this on a small scale and at a large scale, which is also very helpful. But it's forming those relationships with other people in the community to make sure it's all happening.
So as we've been talking, we've all, I think, come to the conclusion that having seeds and localized seeds and regional seeds is really creating a sense of harmony, of care, of economic empowerment, and interconnecting us to ourselves and to our cultures and to our history. And the more that we can be seed advocates and talk about our seeds and our seed experiences and share seeds with family, friends, our community, the more resilient we'll be to the outside impacts and market forces that are occurring, especially in regard to climate. And we're able to have businesses in our communities that we are able to support with our seed purchases and sharing of seeds. And we also have our universities, which we really haven't had a chance to talk about. Those are also resources for us about the science, about questions we have regarding seeds and seed sovereignty, and also having a conversation with those institutions in our community about how important seed saving is and seed sovereignty and having culturally relevant seeds and seeds that reflect the values and the ideas and our sense of place in our communities, and allowing them to also interconnect and have conversations about seeds are really important. We're all in this together, we're all a community, and we're all interconnected. And seeds and seed sovereignty is a great way to empower ourselves, to feed ourselves, to educate ourselves, and to allow us to have the fullest experience of our true selves. So I appreciate you guys all so much for coming out this morning. I will be here if you have any other questions, and then my business card is right there. So thank you so much.